With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Dive Cuts. My name is Levi Hootmacher, and I am the one you never hear, but always rely on to bring you these episodes. So many of you know that we have been working on testing out live streaming our podcast, and you might have also seen we've run into some issues with this, which was totally expected on our end as we are trying to figure this whole thing out. Well, we finally got the live streaming to come through with this recent episode of Dive Cuts. However, there was a slight echo issue in the beginning, so that's why you're hearing me. Sam kicked off this episode by asking Matt how his weekend went. After that, Matt will continue breaking down the NCAA tournament seeding and head on into recapping the Alabama game. After this, Sam's mic is all fixed and the podcast is up and running. So without further ado, Matt, how was your weekend?
I actually tuned out as soon as I possibly could. You know, if it wasn't Missouri, I think I was probably more eager to bounce around and sort of get to every other game. There's, you know, I think the one thing that we do is we spend a lot of time during the regular season focused on the SEC and focused on kind of the race that plays out there. And, you know, I think once Missouri was eliminated on Saturday, it was also, you know, a day when a lot of other conference tournaments are getting decided. So I kind of checked out and just kind of channel surfed around for the next, you know, 18 hours that basketball's on and just tried to catch type of things and just try and, you know, I think take in the totality of the weekend. Apologies to Alabama and Texas A&M. I skipped you yesterday in favor of watching Ivy final and watching Princeton qualify, and Princeton's in the pod. So maybe some scouting there, maybe some scouting. Missouri was 27th in the seed list, which is just one or two spots over. So either, to your point, maybe they were already there, you know, as the week kind of unfolded. There were some losses before Missouri played on Friday at the Big Ten tournament in the ACC that may have knocked some teams down the S-curve. Matt Watkins will probably know better than I. He was running the data the entire time. But, you know, you could also make the alternative argument that the win on Friday was really, really important, that it bumped them those one or two spots they needed to get off the 8-9 line and really get out of maybe, you know, having to be in the firing line of a number one. Or, you know, there have been some that have kind of slotted them into maybe having to go play a team like Houston. So you avoid that, and you get rewarded with a 7 seed and a chance to play Arizona, which we'll talk about whether that's a good matchup for this team or not. But importantly, you know, it was a quad 1A win when they needed it and probably got them somewhere into the 7 line, which we saw on Sunday.
Thoughts on Alabama?
Alabama, in a lot of ways, similar to the first time these two teams met. You know, Missouri got the shooting performance that they needed Alabama for most of that game. But it felt like Alabama was just sort of biding its time until they got shots to start dropping. I thought they were really, really good. You know, about 5 or 6 minutes of kind of just saying, okay, we're not going to get our tempo. We're not going to get our normal sort of early clock stuff. And then they just started grinding it. And I thought, you know, for as much as we talk about Alabama being a team that needs tempo, that needs pace, they were really good about getting into stuff, getting into the half court, overloading it, and, you know, really getting into situations where they could just drive and lob. They got guys that they sent to the glass. They were opportunistic in transition. So I thought, you know, for as much as we sort of want to, you know, pigeonhole Alabama, they did a really nice job pivoting. And in this game, you know, the shot chart kind of told the story here around the rim. Missouri could not finish from point-blank range. Alabama's size had a lot to do with that. To me, you know, we talked about it a little bit after the game. The diversity of Alabama's bigs was really, really important. You know, they have a guy that they can just stick at the top of the restricted area in Charles Bediako and just, you know, turn guys away. Noah Clowney, I think, has been impressive all year, but he was impressive in this game. He can, you know, be a weak side rim protector. He can get into situations where he's got to sit down with Kobe Brown and stay in his hip pocket and contest. And, you know, if they had to take Bediako off the floor when Mo Diarra is not playing, they can slide Clowney back into that rim protector role, and then they can just put Noah Gurley on the floor and just, you know, say bow up and make it really hard for Noah and Kobe to post. And so it just got to a point where I thought Missouri really had to work hard for those looks. They, you know, were not able to convert. And I think you saw some legs go about midway through the second half. Jumpers started to get a little bit shorter. You know, you weren't quite seeing the kind of finishing ability even off 2 feet you normally do. So Bama bided its time. It sat down, it guarded, it relied on its length, and then, you know, it got a little run going, and that was all she wrote for about the last 10 minutes. So Missouri hung in there, but, you know, I think Bama's depth and it sort of over, you know, a little bit of a talent edge, obviously, you know, gave it the win. So it unfolded in a way that I think, you know, was not too terribly surprising, but, you know, I think, you know, there was a hope maybe that Missouri could, you know, ride a little momentum into Saturday. It just didn't transpire. The one thing, too, I would say that, you know, if you're looking for a distinction, if you watch how Tennessee guards and how Bama guards, Tennessee's much more aggressive. You know, they're a little bit more heavier or assertive in terms of on-ball pressure. They switch a bit more. Alabama's going to play more pack line. They're going to gap things. They're going to, you know, make you have to play in, you know, through their bodies, through their length. And if you get there, there's somebody waiting at the rim. I think Missouri's ability in the Tennessee game was they were able to pull guys like Uros Plavsic and Olivia Nakamwa into space a little bit. And you saw Noah Carter really, you know, at times excelling by playing those guys into space, especially if it was an empty side, an empty corner side drive. They were able to play off the bounce a little bit, get Tennessee in rotation and play off kicks. Bama's just going to sit back and, you know, kind of clog it up and muck it up. And they're just going to rely on that length to sort of, you know, create problems for you. So it was, you know, it's personnel, but it's also a little bit of scheme, too, that I think, you know, comes into play there.
All right. So I think I figured out what it is. So we're using, like,
you don't have to share. We can just keep going. We can just keep going.
Well, right. Like, this is a very big experiment for everybody involved, you know, me especially. So we're using video.ninja. To basically set up our little control room, and I just had to mute myself there. As long as Matt can still hear me and you guys can still hear me, then great. So moving on, Alabama captures the SEC tournament title. They look like the best team in the country once again. The NCAA tournament broadcast comes on at 5 o'clock, and Missouri didn't have to wait very long to hear their names called, and nor do they have to wait very long to play once the tournament starts. So they're the 7 seed in the southern or the south region. They play at 12:40, which is the third game on that Thursday to tip off.
Did you know it's 10:40 out there? It's 10:40 local time.
You know how time zones work, Sam?
Is that how time
10:40?
So California is 10:40 in the morning. It's like the old days.
Yeah, apparently.
Well, like you just get up and you know, grab some pancakes and go play basketball.
These guys have
These guys have played the 8 a.m. sesh. They've done it. They've done it.
Hey, like that, there's a lot to be said for, you know, the experience of AU. Like, I do think that, you know, there's valid criticism with, you know, when you play so many games, the sort of the value of each possession is sort of lost, and the value of each, you know, game and win and all that sort of stuff is lost. You know, but, you know, you do learn to get up and play. You do learn that, you know, whatever the circumstances are, you got to go play. And I think when you're in a tournament environment, like, that's definitely something that is going to be helpful for Missouri. And hopefully it's something that they, you know, handle okay. First round opponent, Utah State. Matthew, what do we know about Utah State?
They love to shoot it, and they're the nation's best three-point shooting team. If you don't get a chance to them or, like, go look up highlights, you're going to be in for a treat. They are a fun team. They are going to play fast. They're going to play four and five out. They're going to hunt jumpers. You know, if you've watched Bama play, there are some concepts that Bama uses that, frankly, Ryan Odom has borrowed, because he has an entire series in his playbook called Buffalo. So he's borrowed from Nate Oates a little bit there. But they're a fun team. They come out of the Mountain West, played a kind of an underrated non-conference schedule, didn't play like any name programs, but a lot of really, really solid programs. You know, I think you would know that they played Utah Valley and Oral Roberts. Utah Valley won the regular season WAC title. Oral Roberts, everyone seems to know them. They'll probably be a trendy pick in the Duke 5-12 game. Played two really good teams in Santa Clara and Loyola Marymount, which are top 100 level teams out of the West Coast Conference. Took out Wazoo on a neutral floor, and they had a little bit of a rough patch in January in the Mountain West, but played for a conference title on Saturday. They are a short bench team, but man, the guys they do have can absolutely fill it up and stroke it from long distance. So it's going to be a fun team. They run modern stuff, and, you know, stylistically, this might be one game that you're just gonna have a lot of neutrals click over to on the afternoon of Thursday. It has the potential to be a barn burner to watch play out.
Yeah, I think that was, like, my main takeaway is they're gonna do a lot of the things that are gonna challenge you defensively. Missouri, you know, I really think that Missouri was always gonna be sort of like a flawed team defensively. I think we sort of prepared ourselves for that situation. It turns out that you know, all those fears were realized when the season started, and they just weren't great defensively. The good news was is they were, you know, far better offensively than I think we expected. So I do think that Utah State presents, you know, some challenges. Mizzou has a tendency to lose shooters. All these guys can shoot. But it is one of those things where there's enough sort of holes in Utah State where you sort of think this is a game, even though Utah State is favored, and I understand why they're favored. They've, you know, outside of a couple games, they've been really consistent. They've been really good. But this is a game I expect Missouri to win. And the reason I expect them to win is because I think that even if you have extra time to prepare, like, facing the Tigers is still a very complicated team to prepare for, and how you stop them, you know, especially when they have more than one guy kind of getting things going. And they seem to be playing really well right now. They seem to be playing with a chip on their shoulder. That chip seems to be a little bit bigger, you know, with everyone kind of talking about the lack of respect. And I think they're probably going to bring up the fact that they're not even favored in the game, despite being a higher seeded team. And I think all those things kind of factor in. And I just think they're going to be able to spread out Utah State and probably get to the rim pretty easily. And if they can convert rim opportunities and hit a reasonable number of threes, I think this is a game that Missouri can maintain relative control over.
The linchpin here, I think, is going to come in the front court. Utah State has size, but I wouldn't describe it as kind of the size that, you know, we would think of in a traditional way. Taylor Funk is basically a fourth guard for them. They, you know, have Dan Akin, who comes off the bench, but he's a little bit lighter. Kind of reminds me of a Damari Carroll, kind of in terms of his play style. They have one traditionalist big in Tevin Dorius, but the thing is, teams like Boise State, San Diego State, that have a little bit more traditional post players or guys that can play more on the block, have really given them trouble. You know, they have, you know, I would say this is a team that plays positive defense more so than, you know, they're going to run guys off the spot. That plays well for Noah Carter, and it plays well for Kobe Brown to play through the post. You know, typically Utah State doesn't run two guys at the post. So, you know, if it's solo coverage and it's Kobe Brown on, you know, Taylor Funk or on, you know, Dan Akin, I think those are matchups you're going to want. Missouri's offense hunts those. And if you do send two at Kobe, they can play out of it. Missouri can also, I think, you know, exploit this team a little bit in early clock. So it's going to be one where I think Missouri's size is going to be, you know, I think more functional for what they want to do. The other thing to keep in mind here, too, is if Missouri scores, it can set a token press and then really keep Utah State from getting into it stuff quickly. That's what teams have done that have really taken out of rhythm. They make shots, they set the press, and they force Utah State to come down and face you once you've loaded up to them. So for Missouri, you know, I think, you know, we've talked about, you know, how early on in the season it was just go, 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 and then they began to kind of throttle and be a little bit more opportunistic. I think it's going to be beneficial for them to do that, to try and, you know, at times back the throttle down and make Utah State run offense and make them sort of face Missouri when they're set. So that'll be something I'm going to be keeping an eye on too.
What is the biggest thing that concerns you about this matchup?
You know, both of these teams are teams that, you know, can get on the wrong side of stuff quickly. If you don't, you know, when Utah State has lost games, it's when they've even gotten good looks and they just don't drop. The same thing goes for Missouri. That even if Missouri is running good action, even if it's getting shots that, you know, we would consider high value, they're just not dropping. Utah State will absolutely feast on long rebounds. They'll get out, they'll push, their guys fill lanes and they attack. And they just become a perpetual motion machine when they do that. And they can, you know, 10-12-0 scoring Jags pretty quick. And so you're going to get into a situation where Missouri's, you know, a team that we've seen, if they fall behind pretty early, sometimes takes, you know, they can come back, but other times they can get a little bit sandbagged. So I think that's the thing you worry about is jumpers lead to runouts. Utah State seems to find its rhythm, and Missouri just isn't enough. Even if they're controlling possession counts, they just can't make enough shots to kind of offset what's happening. So I think that's what I worry about. Defensively, you have to be aware that Utah State's going to, they are fantastic moving off the ball. Their guards get in the paint, they get jump stops, and all of them can make quick reads and find somebody moving off the ball. If you help off, they're going to find a shooter, even if your rotation's on point. So this team sometimes, I think, hesitancy to overhelp. They help off at the wrong times. They'll get punished for that. So those are the two things I worry about. Are they going to trigger some, you know, transition chances for Utah State? And are they going to, you know, fall down off the ball a little bit defensively? So those are the two things that I think get to me. But are those your concerns, or what worries you about this matchup?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, I think we talk enough offline, or really off, you know, still online, but, you know, not in public, that I think that articulates a lot of the things. You know, it's one thing to kind of come back and beat a team like LSU or Georgia. It's another thing entirely to come back on a team that has rightfully earned an at-large berth in the NCAA tournament. You know, so if you do get down, you know, early, and you know, let's say a few threes are falling for Utah State and they're not falling for Missouri, are they going to be able to, you know, generate enough points to at least kind of stay within that striking distance to where they can kind of use, you know, the you know, a run that we're kind of used to seeing them, you know, hit here and there. You know, I think Evan Mee always has the kill shot stat. Missouri is always one of the you know, leaders in the country for a team that can kind of hit that 10-point run. You know, but those are also a lot harder to kind of come by when you're talking about, you know, good teams, you know, specifically like a team like Utah State. You know, that's probably my biggest worry is that, you know, that Missouri just kind of shows up, shots aren't going in early, and they get, you know, down. And, you know, because of, their defense not being all that great in the half court, Utah's able to kind of pace themselves out and keep scoring at a clip that keeps Missouri at an arm's length. I don't think this is necessarily a game that the Aggies can beat the Tigers by, 15 or 20 points. I think that Missouri is too good even around the rim that they would be able to find points and keep it close.
Yeah.
For me, the key is like, you always worry how your team is going to shoot. And if Mizzou comes out and hits around 40%, I think they win the game. If they shoot higher than 40%, I think they're probably going to win easier than maybe we would expect. If that number drops to like below 30, I have a hard time imagining that they're going to win. I just think like that level of shooting allows them to space the floor, allows, Noah and Kobe, the ability to operate around the rim, and even like, Dree Golston, his ability to sort of operate in that, mid to low post as a guard is important when you have shooters around. So I think like that's probably the area that I would be looking at.
The one thing I would worry about here is, or if I were Utah State too, is you have a little bit of a short bench. They're, I think, number 330 or 335 nationally in bench minutes. They don't go very deep in the backcourt either. If they get a couple fouls on guys, namely like an Ashworth or a Shulga, who are their primary ball handlers, then I think they could be in some trouble there. They can roll some bigs through a little bit, and they can kind of change their lineups a little bit based on their big personnel, but they're going to ride Ashworth, Shulga, and Bairstow for like 30 to 35 minutes a night. If those guys are used to going at full pace, but it'll be interesting to see what the depth, situation looks like there. Missouri's also a little bit short right now, but it should get Trey Gamillion back. It would be great. I'm not sure how likely it is that they could get a certain Columbia native back as well in the rotation, if not to score, but just so a guy like Mosley could eat some minutes and kind of distribute that out a little bit. But I think that's something that's going to be interesting to see too. It's just, how deep, each team can go here and sort of what that does stylistically to each side. So I think that's one other thing to keep in mind here too.
Well, and we got a question here that would you agree that Mizzou has proven that they are less reliant on the three ball lately as the season has progressed?
I think so. I think, the one thing that I mentioned over the weekend that I thought was really nice was that you see DeMoy Hodge and Noah Carter attacking closeouts more, and being a little bit more willing to put the ball down on the deck. You see them willing to cut more. I think that's been nice, just for the sake of diversity for the offense, and it forces the defense to rotate and they've been able to play out of that. I think the three-point shots they are taking are quality three-point shots. I think they're getting stuff that's in the flow of the offense that they really want. They're getting stuff, out of some spread pick and rolls. Obi's doing a job hitting out of hard doubles, but I think they've done a really, really nice job of sort of diversifying shots. And I think for Missouri, they get in a situation where if they hit some early, particularly an early clock, if they're coming down and they're getting early clock threes, you start to see the three-point, volume tick up a bit. They kind of have a hot hand fallacy to their shot selection. But, I think in general they've done a really nice job sort of moderating it. A couple of times when they've won games, it's been like under 40% of their shot volume, which is considerably less than it was. So I do think there's some, truth to the fact they've moderated that pulling from distance.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you. I think there are periods where they fall in love with the three-point shot. And I also think that their coach, and one of the things that I like about Dennis is he reminds his players, and you could tell there's been several half times where they've kind of come out and it's just like they're turning down open threes, and it's largely because they probably had a talk at halftime, and Coach Gates is just like, y'all are getting a little too three happy. Like we make our what is it, the gold shots they have are, shots at the rim, and they want to get to the rim. And that's primary staple of what they do is, cutting and attacking the rim. And so I think a lot of times you have to remind players that this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to get easier baskets. Three-pointers are one of those things that are great when they're going in, but they're also highly volatile. And because of that, you want to make your life as easy as possible. I think that's one of the things that really keyed, keyed their comebacks. You know, just speaking again of like the, you know, what they did at Georgia and then coming back against LSU, as they attack the rim, and then as they're attacking the rim, they're getting easier points. Then all of a sudden, those kickout threes start dropping a little bit with more ease. And once those do, that's where you kind of get into that that Missouri Avalanche period. We did get another question. I actually think
they did the same thing against Ole Miss too.
You're right. Basically focusing at that and just hit a couple shots at the right time. But another question here from the chat basically says, with a win, I think it's a cherry on top for an excellent year one. With a loss, is there a letdown, or are we still ahead of the curve with Dennis Gates?
I mean, I think they're ahead of the curve. I don't think you could or getting a double bye in the first year of a coaching change is a letdown. I think it's recalibrating sort of expectations down the football area. Look at how many guys made the NCAA tournament who were first year coaches this year, you know, coming on the heels of what TJ Otzelberger did last year. So will this become more of the norm? I don't know, but I think relative to what we know historically and, you know, what we've looked at least I've looked at data wise, Missouri's an outlier in terms of making the tournament year one, finishing almost 80 spots ahead of where they were a year ago in KenPom. They've never had a double bye in the SEC tournament until this year. This is their highest, first time they haven't been an 8 seed since 2012, I think. Or so by almost every, you know, metric that we would, you know, say even a loose benchmark that's not wonky and statistically based, they're ahead of schedule. Now the question is, can, you know, what does year two look like? I remember, you know, we were sitting here 5 years ago with Konzo Martin, and everyone was sort of having the same sort of spasms of joy. You know, we made the tournament. Even if we don't make it, we're bringing Jonte Porter back. Isn't this great? And then year two, there was injury luck that stepped in and, you know, robbed that team of probably even at least having an NIT shot. You know, you don't know, you know, what's going to happen. I think a lot of people assume that, you know, this is a linear progression that's just going to keep getting better. We don't know. There's going to be some guys coming off this team. There are going to be guys that are freshmen that are coming in. We don't know what's going to happen with Kobe Brown or Isaiah Mosley, if they're going to exercise a year here. But in this span of time, this is overachieving. Is it, you know, reasonable to apply it moving forward? I don't know. But I think if, you know, you came to me this time a year ago, almost this time a year ago, and said Missouri's going to make a hire and he's going to make the tournament in year one, I would say that's absolutely ahead of schedule. I don't think you could frame it any other way. And if they lose, you know, in the moment it'll be disappointing. But I think overall, you look at what the feel the fan base is right now, I think it's one of overwhelming sort of, you know, satisfaction with the job that Dennis won in year one.
Yeah, I think regardless of what happens in the NCAA tournament, you know, like I'm always a body of work versus one game. You know, I know, like, you know, as an example, a lot of things.
Yeah.
We joked earlier about the 2012 NCAA tournament. That was one of the most fun years I've ever had watching basketball. That team was a blast to watch. It ended poorly.
Awesome.
Awesome. But it doesn't take away how much I enjoyed the process of that season. This year has actually been pretty similar as far as my enjoyment of watching Missouri play basketball. They, you know, very much like that team. They, you know, they're smaller. You know, they play a lot of five out. They, you know, they pass the ball. They share the ball. They seem to really kind of be in it for each other. And I think when you sort of, you know, step back from and take like a bigger picture and you sort of look at what Dennis Gates has done and what all the other new hires have done, like there's no way around it. Like he's been
he's been terrific. Like it's been a great season. Now he's had some advantages in that he's basically able to import the culture that he built at Cleveland State into the Missouri locker room from day one by bringing in the four guys that he brought in. Guys that sort of knew the expectation, knew how he wanted to play, and I think Chris Jans brought in one of those guys. I think didn't he bring one guy to Mexico State? Yeah, one guy. Todd Golden.
Did he bring anybody? Mexico State guy and Will. Like, I'm
yeah.
But conversely, Ellis brought in it's an entire backcourt.
What, three guys? Three guys from Murray State.
Yep.
So yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. I think that's something that helped Dennis. It clearly didn't help Matt McMahon. But one of the things that I think it helps you do is you impart your culture quickly. You build the kind of environment where guys are more accountable, but they're accountable for each other, and hopefully that kind of carries over. Now, as we've seen, this is a very sort of fickle business. There are 14 other teams that are trying to win. Missouri is at a resource deficit with Kentucky, probably Tennessee and Arkansas, and probably maybe two, three other schools. Like, they're middle-ish of the pack. I do think that, and you take into the fact that Ole Miss is hiring Chris Beard. I'm not a huge fan of hiring that
guy. He didn't get any easier today.
Right. He's like, whatever you want to say about his offseason stuff, which is clearly there's a lot there and there's a lot that Ole Miss is going to have to deal with and answer for in making the decision to hire him. He's a fantastic basketball coach, and he's won everywhere he goes, and he's won big. Like, he had Texas Tech in the national title game, so I think that's going to make Ole Miss competitive. We'll see if he can import that into a different league as far as being able to maybe counteract some of the potential negative recruiting that's going to happen with him. It's going to be fascinating to watch regardless, but there are 14 really good basketball coaches in the SEC. There are 14 programs that are trying to win, and not everybody can win. And I think this is something that I always enjoy the Gary Parrish, Matt Norlander's Ion College Basketball podcast. And one of the things that Gary Parrish was kind of saying a couple of years ago about the Big 12 after somebody had gotten fired, and they were just like, you can't fire this guy. Like, somebody's got to lose games. Like, somebody is going to lose games.
Steve Prohm.
Yeah, it was probably after Prohm. But you look at how good all the coaches are. You look at all the moves that
these programs
made to be competitive. And you at this point, what you're hoping is that Dennis Gates is more than just what he's shown you this year. He's also a guy who can get better talent in and then win at the same or higher level with that talent. Do I think that he can? Sure. I mean, anything's possible. The SEC is an incredibly competitive league. I like what I've seen from Dennis so far. I don't think there's any way possible that you could be unhappy with the way the season has gone. It's 24 wins, 9 losses. Like, that's
earned him a pay raise too. Got him that pay raise. Which,
yeah,
up to 4 million. Which, as we, I think I said last week, that's going to be the median in this league now. And I think that's going to look better as the TV money from the next SEC deal comes in. I think that's going to look more affordable time, but if he keeps winning, you're probably going to have to give him another raise somewhere in there. But Missouri clearly decided that it wasn't going to mess around here. It wasn't going to, see if it really took a Georgetown or somebody else coming in to stir this was a proactive move on the administration. We harped on this administration and the institution for, not always stepping forward. They've done it this time. I hope the staff budgets continue to grow progressively with Dennis's salary too, but they took care of a guy that they think is going to, be the long-term solution here. So it'll be fascinating to see it play out, but in the near term, there's absolutely success. I don't think you can frame it any other way. And, unless, you're just a bigger crank than I am.
Yeah. We are already getting recruiting questions. I know that this is always going to be popular when we do a live show as talking about recruiting. One of the questions about Jamarian Sharp, I mean,
he's got to go in the portal first, man.
Yeah, I would really just like to see, let's just enjoy the NCAA tournament, or at least Missouri's experience the NCAA tournament, however long it may be. And then, because I don't really think the staff is going to be worried about having kids on campus and stuff like that until their season is done. Hopefully that's not for another couple weeks. A pretty good scenario is still being, done and wrapped up by Saturday afternoon. but if they do win their first round game, they likely get Arizona, a team who is really good, but I think you could probably beat them. And so that would, a Sweet 16, I think, is not likely, but possible. And I think if you want to talk about a great recruiting pitch, how about coming off a Sweet 16 appearance, your first season as a head coach, having a full arena, all season long, and finishing ranked in the top 25. This is what we did with Cleveland State transfers and stuff like that. You're a five-star prospect. What do you think we can do with you?
Yeah, I think they've made some reported contact with a handful, graduate transfers. Last week, grad transfers could go into the portal. Today, oh boy, they were piling out the door into the transfer portal today. Today was the first day that underclassmen could go. Some SEC staff's already meeting with some of these guys. Missouri's got to prepare for the NCAA tournament. I think the recruiting questions for me and what this roster construction really become pressing, once the season's done. They've got to get back and have exit meetings. There may be some guys who suspect they might be going or want to go, but they've got to have those exit meetings and sort of talk that through. There may be other guys who are on the fence. We still have to, get a sense for what Kobe and Isaiah Mosley might do. And coming back, I think this team is going to have to figure out what its needs are. Not that they don't, coaches, I think, have a good sense for what it is. I think the sense is they're probably going to have 2 to 3 slots that they might play, just because that's what usually happens in the spring. The question is where those are and what they're going to have to try and fill with. I don't like trying to push guys out the door or speculate who's going to go. We'll know when we know, or when we get a better sense for how those exit meetings are. But, I'm sure people are going to start marking names in the portal and putting them on wish lists, because that's just what happens. But, I think we got to get to the end of the season to really have a sense for where the needs are and what sort of they're targeting. But for right now, if the season ended today and nobody left, they'd be completely filled up. So they're at the limit. If they're going to do anything, people have to go. But we just don't know who that is yet, or who's considering it.
Yeah, and I think a very, very big key is figuring out what's going to happen. When you talk about Kobe Brown, the latest, who was it? Givony had Kobe Brown as one of the late second round picks.
He's clocking in at between 50 and 65 on draft boards. Yeah, Givony had him at 58. Yeah.
That's going to be a decision for Kobe, and he's going to have to decide if he wants to take that next step, try to, be an NBA player, or come back and, probably make, some decent NIL money at Mizzou and play a fifth year.
And then Isaiah Mosley, we had heard that, Isaiah absolutely loves Dennis Gates. He's just had a lot going on in his personal life and trying to get that sorted out. Obviously, it hasn't worked out where he's been on the floor as much as we want him to. So is that something where he kind of wants to come back for one more year and sort of, be the guy? Those two players are, are such a central focus of what Missouri wants to do offensively, that if they come back, that completely changes what you want to do in the off season and the kinds of players that you're going to be looking at. I think they still are probably going to they're still going to want a big. And they'll figure out how to make room to get somebody with some size. But if Mosley comes back, you don't necessarily need a combo guard. The Townsend transfer, Timberlake, would be a really good fit because he played a lot of point guard, but is a combo guard and a guy who can handle the ball. And I think Mosley, if he comes back, then you don't need that guy. So yeah, there's too much in the air right now to sort of figure out, where they're gonna go. But you have to feel like the staff kind of knows.
And on 24 recruiting,
who they're gonna beat? Oh yeah, in the 24 recruiting class.
Yeah, and yep. The live period doesn't start until next month. Missouri's, been really active. I think they've gotten 9, 10, or 11 guys on campus, if you want to count from the start of practice last fall to today. They've also gotten a little bit of a jump on 25s. The question that I think you're going to see moving into the spring is already 2024 is going to want to commit early. The reality is now for a lot of high school kids, April and May are portal time. Coaches are going to, be there in body, at maybe some of the live periods. But the focus is going to be on going and getting vets out of the portal. And if you've got a spot, that you like, do you feel, the need to pull the trigger and commit? Because if you wait too long, it might evaporate. And if you get into the situation in the spring, coaches aren't going to be looking for a lot of late 2024 kids this time next year. They're going to be looking at portal guys. So the timeline for 24s may be sped up a little bit. We'll see if that results in any kind of earlier commitments, but we've got to get to the live period and get out of, the high school season for that. So this is all a way of us saying we got to wait for the regular season to end. We got to wait for the postseason to come to an end here and really let Missouri get a sense for what it needs and what it wants to do. But the recruiting questions, I assume, are never going to stop. They're always going to, continue to come. In waves.
Yeah, and we'll have an entire off season to spend a lot of time talking about it. So you and I have been trying to figure out
but for now we still get basketball.
Yeah. But we've been online since about I've been online since 7:30 trying to figure this out. It's now 9:38. So I love everybody, and I'm thankful that we've had this many people stick around. I think we're going to...
Thank you, everybody, for yielding patience.
But we'll be better. It was a learning experience. I think I learned a lot. I understand, latency and microphone stuff now, and we're probably going to be able to figure out how to get online a little faster next time. So if you enjoyed this at all, please make sure that you subscribe. Having more subscribers, having likes on the video is definitely going to help us out. It's going to help us grow the channel. If we grow the channel, we can do more things like this. And not just me and Matt hopping on here, but also we might actually see, Data Mizzou, Matt Watkins, live and in person at some point. Really, a whole host of folks at Rock'em Nation. I think, Dan Keegan is one of our newer writers, and he's a guy who's going to bring in some stuff. Nate and BK, once we get them set up and on this live stuff, we're going to have them as well.
I'm really excited about what this YouTube side of, you know, the media can kind of do for us and what we can do. It's really exciting. Levi's working on some graphics packages that maybe we need to reduce in size to kind of make sure that they work right. But they're going to look great, and I think it's going to be a lot better than just, you know, like me and Matt in black boxes.
Earmuffs
maybe,
here.
Maybe we should reduce the size of us, and like we're just going to be like here, and then the logos are bigger, but whatever. We're going to try to make it look nicer. But we appreciate everybody having on. If we feel like maybe there's a live later this week that can be talking about a Mizzou NCAA tournament victory. Who knows? Until then, thanks everybody for tuning in. Like and subscribe, and we will be back soon. Thanks.